Okay, good morning to everybody. We left off last week, right in the middle of the sugya of Iroi, as to what is the status of a liquid in transit. So it has already left the Kli Rishon, it hasn't yet landed in the Kli Sheni, and the process is coming into contact with the raw food. So we said this is making a cup of tea. Bottom line is, can you make a cup of tea in Shabbos in a normal manner? Take a tea bag, put it into a cup, pour some hot water onto it, either from an urn or from a tea kettle. Is that permissible or not? So we saw three different possibilities and we're showing them how that plays out. So one was the view of the Rashbam that said it's totally mutter because Iroi is like a klisheni and there's nothing to worry about. Then we saw from the view of Rabbeinu Tam that Iroi is not quite like a klisheni. It's not quite like a klisheni either. It's somewhere in the middle. But it's mevashel kidei klipa, cooks the outermost part of the food, which of course would pose a problem for us. Even cooking the smallest amount of the tibia would be prohibited in the Torah. Then we had the third extreme view of an opinion in Tosfos in Maseches Vachim that we realized as we were going through the sugya last week was an alternate view of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam seemed to have changed his mind on this issue. And at least at one point Rabbeinu Tam was of the opinion, or at least some Rishon presented Rabbeinu Tam of the opinion, that Iroi is literally a Kli Rishon, that it cooks through and through Hachol Mikol Kol. That's a complete and total bishul. So we had across the spectrum every possibility, Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, somewhere in the middle. What exactly that take is on Iroi. So we brought Raya's back and forth. We try to bring Raya's from Kashrus, and we try to bring Raya's from Shabbos, and we try to bring Raya's from Afreshes Chala, we try to bring Raya's from Kashrus and Kalim, and then every Raya that we went to, there was another way to refute the Raya. So we now move to the next Raya, which is a Raya in the Sugya of Seder Kochim in Maseches Vachim. And this became really one of the primary rayas, but again, that's what we've seen in all the other rayas. It's a primary raya either way. So let's take a look at the ninth of the sources, ninth in the Rambam Kamos. It's a Gemara Maseches Vachim Daf Tzadiyem Amud Beis. Tana Rabbanan Amud Raisa. Asher Tavu Shalbo. The Gemara is commenting on Pasuk in Parshas Tzav, where the Torah says that if you take meat of a korban and you cook it in a basket, cook it in a pot, so then that pot now is going to receive belias, it's going to receive some taste, some absorption of taste of that food, which is right now okay. But the problem is that kochim is going to become also very soon, it's going to become nosar. Let's say, for example, when I'm cooking the meat of a chatas, and then some of that meat's going to go into the walls of the pot, and then by tomorrow, that meat's going to become treif. Whatever belias are inside is treif, because it's nosar, you're not allowed to eat it. And you're not allowed to eat it, then you're not allowed to cook with the pot. Cooking with the pot is going to bring out some of those treif, some of those nosatam into the food you're going to be cooking. So if you're going to try to cook tomorrow's chatas using yesterday's pots, so that's going to be a big, big problem. So the Torah says that you have to get rid of those bleas. How do you get rid of the bleas? So the Torah says, well, it depends. If it's a kli cheres, there's no way. If it's earthenware, so earthenware doesn't come out. So yishava, you have to break it. But if it's a kli nechoshes, for sure, if it's a metal, so then more of the mind, then you can basically kasher it. More than kasher, it says explicitly there's a parish of kashering when it comes to chulin. That's the parish that we're used to. There's a parish of kashering when it comes to kachim. So here the Torah says, Hashem to Bushal Bo. So the Torah has the following interpretation. I know for the pasuk that the pot was used to cook with. What if the pot wasn't used to cook with, what if the pot was used to pour boiling water into it? Now, let's say you have a plate, you have a bowl that you poured boiling water into. You poured chata soup into. So I have this big pot of cooking or a piece of chata. Then I pour some of this content into another plate. How do you know that I have to do what's called mariko shtiva? I have to kasher that other plate as well. The Gemara dashes from a pasuk. To tell me that even though I didn't literally cook it, it wasn't literally a pot of the fire, it was merely poured contents into, it also requires Mariko Shtifa. Okay, so I'd kind of agree in terms of the basic price and basic things. And now the Amorah begin to pilpul with this price. Boy, Rabbi Chaim is the following Shayla. Tola ba'avir tarer ma'ahu, what would it be if I have an oven and I'm roasting a piece of a chatas meat, a piece of carbon meat in the oven, where it's not literally touching the walls of the oven. It's suspended in midair in the oven. So if you think about it, the meat is being cooked in the oven, roasted in the oven, but it's not being nibbled in the oven. There are no bleas. Bleas take place when it's really touching. So the Gemara is the following shot. What's the din? A bishul biluhu de kapit rachamana. When the Torah tells us this model of Mariko Shtifa, the Torah says that kelim that were cooked in have to be kashered for mikdash. Is the Torah describing something where both bishul and belia took place? There was a cooking and a belia and an absorption, so a regular pot. So when I cook the chata soup, so then there's a mice of bishul taking place, and there clearly belia is taking place. So that's the model that the Torah requires to be kushiva. Bishul below kavar rachman. Although no, maybe you're wrong. A bishul below belua. Maybe when the Torah speaks about kashering, the Torah says asher tevushal bo. If there was a mice of bishul that occurred in this kli, then it requires Mariko Shtifa. It doesn't say the word belia. We usually think that bishul belia also had the name, but not necessarily. Maybe the din is exerzik also. That if bishul took place in this vessel must be kosher, cannot be just left the way it is. So it would be enough kamina if I take a piece of chatas meat, I put it inside an oven, turn on the oven, but it doesn't go anywhere near the walls of the oven, it doesn't touch the walls of the oven. It's a dry meat. There's no sand, no steam, no other. It's a dry piece of meat that's roasting 50 feet away from the walls of the oven, but it's inside the oven. So is that chayav and mariko shtifa? So do you say that a bishul ubelua kavod rachamana? Or do I say a bishul below belua is also enough? That was Rabbi Chaim Shmuel. So I'm a Rabbi. Rabbi said, I'll bring you a proof. Tashma. Echad shebi shebo v'yach shiul sachar osech. Rabbi brings a riot to Rabbi Chaim Shmuel from the case of Iroi. Just as the din is that Iroi requires Mariko Shtifa, so too roasting inside the oven requires Mariko Shtifa. Now, at first glance, it's a very, very difficult proof. Those are opposite cases. The case of Iroi is a blia without a bishul, whereas the case of putting a piece of meat into the oven is a bishul without a blia. So that's what the Gemara responded. No. Balua below bishul, lo kama vayalan. He said, I wasn't asking a shayla about belia without bishul. That, of course, requires Mariko Shtifa. Ki kama vayalan bishul below belua. I was asking the other shayla, says Rabbi Chava. You misunderstood me. I wasn't talking about one half. I was talking about the other half. So when all the dust settles, we're not really sure what the din is. We know that there are really three different scenarios of quote-unquote cooking, and that could be potential Mariko Shtifa questions. There's cooking in a pot, taking a piece of meat, making a little bit of water, vegetable, making a soup, cooking a piece of chatas meat in a pot. There is no question of the desire that that pot requires Mariko Shtifa. That is bishul, that is belias, that's the model that the Torah is discussing. But then you have two other cases which are different from one another. Each one has one factor. How are they different? So one case is bishul below belia. That means when bishul below belia refers to when I'm cooking inside the oven, but not touching the walls of the oven. Then you have the opposite. You have belia below bishul when I'm doing iroi. So what's the halacha in those cases? So again, one may be chayav, may not be chayav. We don't know. But the part that's critical for us is the phrase that Chazal just used in the middle of this discussion. The Gemara was referring to balua below bishul. The Gemara said that when you do iri on something, that's called balua below bishul. So the question is, what does that mean? What do those words mean? It's balua below bishul. So if you take a look at the 10th of the Rav Kamos, so mikan medaktik rabbeinatam, iri kiklirishon, mitachashikim bushul. So rabbeinatam says that from the fact that lemaisa you require Mariko Shtifa for Iroi, that's a raya that Iroi is like a klirishon. But Nira tells us the opposite is true. The Adrav Akashimikat, that Karli Bersamach Balua Blo Bishul. But wait a second, but the Gemara calls it Balua Blo Bishul, so it means it's not Bishul. New Yeshlama, the Chashimle Balua Blo Bishul, Vishim is Bashul, Machmas Akli, the Bukliach, and Ispashul. It tells us, no, the only reason the Gemara calls it Lo Bishul is because when you have Iroi, the bishul is not taking place in the kli that you're pouring into. The bishul took place in the pot. That's why it's technically called balua below bishul. But is it being mevashel? The answer is absolutely yes. So Rabbi said, when the dust settles, our next riot, we're still going nowhere. We seem to be going nowhere fast. That every time we bring a Gemara that seems to say something about Iroi, so we have half the Rishonim get so excited. Wow, this Gemara must have said that it's believe below bishul, so therefore in Shabbos it's mutter, and the other Rishonim say, nah, that's not what it meant. So where do we go? Where do we go from here? We have raya's. We crossed the spectrum of halacha. We've gone from kashrin kelim to ilchus shabbos, to ilchus karbanos, to ilchus chalat. You name it, and at the end of the day, we don't have an absolute answer. What is the din about Iroi? Is Iroi a nothing? Is Iroi a klirisha? Or is Iroi somewhere in the middle of Mashal Niklipa? So let's skip through all the Gemaras and finally get to Shukhara. What the Vishtei, what does it say in Shukhara finally? So let's take a look at the Ramah and skip down to the 12th of the Ramah Kobos, where the Ramah finally takes a stand on the issue. So comes the Ramah to Yerodea and speaks about the following several scenarios. The Kiluach ben Akederos Achas, you have a hot pot. There's a kiluach, something is spraying out of it, something is coming out of it. Shaholach al kederet seydenes. Something is pouring out of the hot pot onto a cold pot. Now, this could be, this rabba happens to be an uchus basa b'cholov. So it could be talking about, I have a pot of chicken soup cooking, and some of that chicken soup starts to pour over onto some milchik kinds of a plate or something, milchik food. The rabba makes the following distinction. If nifsacha kiluach, if the stream, the flow, was stopped, it means it's not an ongoing flow, it's a splash, it's a spritz of food that's coming from fleishiks to milchiks, but it's not an ongoing flow. So then one can argue that's treated like a klisheini. That you can argue that by the time that item, that spritzing, since it's going in the air, it's separate and distinct, it's broken up that continuity from the Kli Rishon, that's what's called Iroi Shenifsach HaKiluach. So the Ramah is very lenient about it. It says Iroi Shenifsach HaKiluach. That's a red like a cliche. But what about the Imlo Nifsach? What if the Iroi is not broken? It means I'm literally pouring. It's not like there was a spritz of chicken soup. There was a I'm tilted on, I'm pouring the chicken soup onto something. That's a problem. Haviki Iroi, says the Ramah, then we can't ignore it. Vakadera Hatzenenes Nesra. And the lower pot has become Osir. Ima Yatzeletes Bekiluach HaRagim Vakadera. Of course, that's if everything is Yatzeletes, but if the soup is already cooled down, then there's nothing to talk about. But says the Ramah, Vatavshul Shabasoch HaShari. The Ein Iroi Osir Rakadei Klipa. However, says the Ramah, the food inside the pot, that's okay. The food inside the pot is mutter. Why is that? Here's the following scenario. I have a pot of chicken soup, and some of the chicken soup is pouring onto I have a bowl on the counter, I have a bowl of macaroni and cheese. And the chicken soup is not falling into the macaroni and cheese, it's falling on the outside, it's falling onto the kedera shabel, says the Ramah. Well, it's eerie, all right. And Iroi is a problem, but Iroi is only a problem, kedei klipa. So it causes a problem to the outermost item that it touches. In this case, that's good news for us, because the outermost item is the plate, or is the bowl, whereas the food inside is already past the point of penetration. So the food technically is going to be mutter. So says the Ramah, finally, achrei kosa kol, the answer to the question, what does Iroi do? Iroi causes a problem, kedei klipa. It asks kedei klipa, no more, no less. So we have no right to say nothing happened. We have no right to say that everything penetrated entirely. But what we do have to say is that Iroi does pose a problem. It poses a partial problem. And as a partial problem, we have to be concerned up until the point of kedei klipa. It is for this reason that the Shulchan Aruch, we skip ahead to the Maribok number 15, on the next page, so the Shulchan Aruch tells us that this theme of meeting Iroi halfway, that it's a problem, at least vis-a-vis kedei klipa, this now impacts the Ilchus Shabbos as well. The Shulchan Aruch writes, also litein tavlin b'ka'ara, v'laros alein b'kli rishon. It's for this reason that it is prohibited to take spices, which have not yet been cooked, put them into an empty plate, and simply take hot water from a tea kettle, take hot water from an urn, and pour it onto the spices, that is off limits. That is also why? Because that's doing Iroi, and we have no right to rely on the Rashbam, who just ignored Iroi and said, that's all cliche. No, we have to be concerned that Iroi is a problem, and as a problem, it's a problem of Chas Kashrus, it's a problem of Chas Shabbos as well. Difa HaMach L'Maisa, Shulchan Aruch says, Now that I take raw food, raw spices, and just simply pour hot water onto them. The reason for this, as the Book of Avraham, the 16th of November comes, in Iran, if you went ahead and did it, as a klipa sura, this Mashlim Shabbos, says the Book of Avraham, if you went ahead by mistake and you poured hot water onto the spices, so even b'di'evet, if the fact you cannot eat those spices on Shabbos, because the outermost part of those spices was cooked, and that's like a davishin is bashel b'Shabbos, and we know that din is, if somebody cooked something on Shabbos, if it was done intentionally, for sure you can't eat it, even if it was cooked by mistake, you're not allowed to eat it at least till Shabbos is over. So the Magen Avraham says that if a person by mistake poured hot water onto spices, or we'll call it a tea bag, so that even with the event, one would not be permitted to drink that tea on Shabbos, because the klipa became also. The Har Rebbe Natam de-examined the Mishnah de Shabbos, because Rebbe Natam brought a raya from a Mishnah, and also, you know, we spoke about it already last week, I have a Tosfos, that brings that whole raya Tosfos that we spoke about at great length. So the bottom line is that since Rebbe Natam said it, that's what we passed in the halacha, so the game is over. That one is not permitted to pour hot water on the spices, and if one went ahead and did it, even with the event, we're going to have to aser those spices because they were, quote unquote, cooked on Shabbos. So now the question becomes, should we accept this Rabbeinu Tam, should we accept this Magen Avraham to the extreme that the Magen Avraham went? The Magen Avraham didn't just tell you, don't pour hot water onto your tea bags, don't have pour water on your spices. What the Magen Avraham says, and if you did it, b'di'eved, you shouldn't even eat the food. Now, should we think that that's an issue? Should we think that's a little bit too much of a chumash that the Magen Avraham is saying, that even b'di'eved not to eat the food? So I'll tell you where my hesitation lies. Now, my hesitation, the post's hesitation lies as follows. So I mentioned a moment ago that if you cook food on Shabbos, b'di'eved, you're not allowed to eat that food. Why you're not allowed to eat the food? What's wrong with that? Well, then I made a mistake. Or I did it on purpose. I cooked food on Shabbos. They'll do me something. I couldn't figure out. Why is the food off limits on Shabbos? So that's a big machlokes in the Gemara. It's a machlokes at Tanoim. So there's one opinion Tanoim that maintains that that's what's called Maisa Shabbos. Any food that was prepared in Israel Shabbos is Asur Min HaTorah. That you're not allowed to eat that food even with the Araisa. There is a view of one of the Tanoim of Yochanan HaSandler. It's actually a machlokes in the Gemara, even according to Yochanan HaSandler. Didn't Yochanan HaSandler even really say that? So according to one version of the Tanoim of Yochanan HaSandler, food that was cooked with Shabbos be Isser, or for that matter, other items that malachas were done to be Isser, those items are off limits nida araisa. And we don't paskin like that. We paskin that those items are only off limits mida rabbanan. Why did Chazal prohibit that mida rabbanan? Why did Chazal make up this institution called Maisa Shabbos mida yavet as a kenas, as a penalty? But we're afraid that if people are going to be cooking right and left and doing malachas right and left, and everyone's going to be benefiting from those malachas on Shabbos, so people are going to continue to do it. It's going to be an incentive for people to do more chatoim. Therefore, we make a kiras. We say, listen, you did an avera. We're not going to let you even enjoy. We're not going to let anybody enjoy that food until at least if the Shabbos is over. That's going to be enough of an incentive to stop people from doing the avera. So we pass in halacha against the view of Rabbi Yochanan Sandler. That's their eyes. We pass no thing as the Rabbanan. And the nation is the Rabbanan is a Kenas. It's like Moshe Bot Abedoma. It's like Chomish over Pesach. And there's one Tana that says that any Chomish that was left over at base was Aser, but it's only Aser with the Rabbanan. Again, the same reason it's Aser with Teres. Kenas was a penalty to prevent people from violating Yisur. So this Kenas, the Rabbanan, was actually Mechlekes, at the further Mechlekes at the time, was this Kenas instituted only b'mezid, only if somebody violates it intentionally, or was this kenas instituted even if one violates it unintentionally? So that was a big machlekes, a Torah machlekes, a Mishar machlekes, a Shulchan Aruch. That's a big, big machlekes, how we follow. We try lechatchila to avoid these surim even b'shayeg. So let's say if somebody made a mistake, you know, for Shabbos, they cooked something, a mistake in Shabbos, even though they didn't mean to do an Aveira, so we would shy away from that food. We would try to avoid eating that food on Shabbos. Sometimes extenuating circumstances may there may be grounds to be a little bit more makeup, but the Shulchan Aruch is machmer in that it's simchus yichesed of the Shabbos. So our starting point is that all of these Yisurim Maisa Shabbos are there, and they're all mederabanan, they're all b'teres kenas. But there is a kula that is suggested as follows: What if I have an activity that's I'm not even 100% sure it's also to do in the first place. There are many, many things in Shabbos that are unclear, that are machlokes, and shilas, and snakes, machlokes, machabas, ramos, groz, a lot of things that go into passing lebaisel for Shabbos. I have an activity that there are real posts, people say it's mutter. I happen not to subscribe to that view. My rabbi doesn't pass that way. Most of us don't follow that view, but there is a legitimate view, a valid view in Rishonim and Poskim that maintains that the following activity would be permissible. So there is a suggestion about Skim that even though when it comes to the Chachila, would we sanction doing such an activity? So the answer is no, that we wouldn't sanction doing activity ploni because we're Choshesh, Shabbat Raisa, Rabbi Shalom Tosso, the Shacharach, Rabbi Oseh, should do. So there are a lot of things that we will refrain from doing for right, for legitimate reasons. But not all Shahs are Chachila Shahs, not all Shahs are can we do it, Rabbi? Some Shahs are we did it already, now what? So now when somebody comes and turns around and says, you know what, we goofed, we made a mistake. I went in and I did action such and such, which I really shouldn't have done. But Lamaisa, if I would have asked Rabbi Ploni, I would have asked the Magen Avraham, I would have asked the Gemara, I would have asked somebody legitimate, they would have told me that it's permissible to actually do that action. So now the Shah that I'm asking is no longer, am I allowed to do this action? The Shah that I'm asking has changed. I want to know, but the Yavid, do I have to be penalized for what I did? Which, quite frankly, would have been okay if I would have asked somebody else. So that's really a fine line. One could argue that when do we say that there's a knas of Maisa Shabbos? That's when I do something that is outright asur, something that's unequivocally asur. Everybody agrees what I'm doing is wrong. So that's a knas. But if I have something where not everybody agrees it's wrong, there actually may be some legitimate sheetahs that hold it's right. There may be other Rabbanim who are passing. There may be other communities that are doing it. Now, I'm not doing it because I'm following my Rav. I'm probably doing the right thing. I'm following the majority of you. But there may be a legitimate opinion out there. So one could argue that if I'm not asking whether I can do it, I'm asking whether I can benefit after the fact, maybe one could be a little more lenient. So who subscribes to that idea? Who came up with this idea that when there are legitimate other opinions, maybe it would be all right with the Evan? So that's actually a Magen Avraham. You take a look at the 17th in the Mamre Kamos. It's a Magen Avraham in a different topic in Hilchos Shabbos. It's not talking about our case of Bishul. Magen Avraham in Siman Shin Chav Gimel writes, the Efshir Diyesh L'Hakol B'Diyeved, Me'ach Diyesh Batir L'Chetchila. It's a context of something that was a Shaila. So Magen Avraham writes, it's possible that one can be naked, one can be lenient after the fact, because quite frankly, there are some calls who will permit activity X, Y, and Z, even L'Chetchila. So the Magen Avraham just opened up a world for us, telling us that Knas of Maaseh Shabbos is a bidiyev, it's not like a tchiv shayla, and maybe we can look at it through much, much more lenient eyes than whether we're asking a shayla about doing a certain action. But that's the case, and one has to raise a question really about this other Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham said that if you pour water on the spices, oh, that's terrible, that's a disaster, and even bidiyev, you got to wait till Shabbos is over. Why is it terrible? Why is it a disaster? There are legitimate opinions that maintain that you're actually allowed to do it. There are great, great, great Talmid Chacham, if you would have asked them, can I take water from a tea kettle, pour it directly on a tea bag, they would have said permissible. Who are those great Rishonim? The Rashbam. We spent the last 2 days going through the Rayas back and forth from Shabbos, from Kashrut, from Kashrut, Kelim, from Chawa, from Kunchim. We span Shas. And we came to the realization that there are three legitimate shittas in Rishonim as to what Iruy does or doesn't do. We paskin, like the middle view, that it's mavashal kedei klipa. One version was it's mavashal kula, and the other version was it's not mavashal at all. So the Rashbam is not a legitimate shita. Rashbam, if I would have asked the Rashbam, can I make tea? The answer is yes. So now we almost have a contradiction within the Magen Avraham. So the one here, the Magen Avraham himself, was the one who opened up the possibility for us to be Mekil B'Diyevet, Yesh L'Hakol B'Diyevet, Yach Hashesh B'Tir L'Chetchila. And now the Magen Avraham himself is kind of closing the door on us and Siman Shin Yud Ches and saying that, no, even B'Diyevet, the tea is going to be Osir. Why is the tea going to be Osir? If there are shittas that hold that it's okay to do, so then why do I have to be Mach B'Diyevet to Asan Tea? So unless one is willing to go down the following route, that when we speak about almost like Das Yechidim in Halacha, we speak about, you know, opinions in halacha that are not generally followed. So it's a very, very fine line to know. What does that mean if certain sheet does not follow? We know there are many, many machloksim, there are machloksim, tanoim, and yamaroim, and mishayim, and shukhrach, and kedolei pas rabbanim, until this very day. Many, many issues are subject to debate. There are some issues that are not debatable, and some things that are not negotiable, and there are certain things that are negotiable that can be discussed. And we have a halachic process, so we end up, in a sense, following certain views. Very often we follow the rules of Rov, and sometimes when it's dinim derabbanan, we're a little bit more makil, snake and derabbanan kula, the rice a little more machmer. You know, again, you have there's certain klolim that kind of force us and point us in the direction that how we come to a normative halacha, in a sense, that we follow today. So the question is, what do you do with all those shitas that in a certain sense have been put on the back burner? If the Rambam held this, and the Rashi held that, and the Rabbeinu Tam held this, and it's not really the way we follow today. There was Machlekes Mechaber Neman and the Gra, the Magen Avraham, and Shita Plonis was kind of rejected. It's not really normative halacha today. So what's that take on that idea? When you have certain Shitas that have not really been accepted over the last 1,000 years, but on the other hand, they were proposed by great, great people. So what's the halachic view on those Shitas now? Do those Jews have any halachic weight whatsoever? So there is a Gemara in Maseches Nida. We've spoken about this in other contexts, a very important Gemara, where the Gemara tells us that every once in a while you have a situation where you have a Nasi Yochid, you have an individual view, and that individual view has been rejected. Yach Rab Mach Rab, we don't really follow that individual view. Sometimes the situation comes up, it's called the Shas El Chak. It's extenuating circumstance, a big, big, big Shas El Chak. And we want to know, can we revive that view? That view is going to be a little bit more lenient. Can we revive that view and in a sense rely on a view that we wouldn't otherwise have relied on? But is there a right? Do we have a right to say there are extenuating circumstances? The Gemara of Zion and Sechaz Nida draws the following distinction. The Gemara says depends. It depends, was the original view outvoted and completely rejected as part of the norm of halacha or not? So the Gemara tells us a story about there was once a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chacham about a certain intricacy of Shailas and Chasum of Tahara. And the accepted view was always not to follow the lenient view of Rabbi Eliezer, was the Nas Yochid, so we generally shied away from that view. So we followed the Rabbin, we followed the majority view of the Chum, and a certain Shaila was Tomei. And that's how life was being lived for many, many years. Now there was a Shaila later, in the days of Rabbi Danos already, but 100 years later, there was a Shaila about some food. Even though the Beis HaMikdash had long been destroyed, there were still many people who were observing some of the intricacies of Tumah V'Tahara. And there was Truma that was still being eaten by Kohanim in Eretz Yisrael for hundreds of years. So the Tudin of Truma Tahara still had to be carefully observed. Eventually, they reached a point where even Truma Tahara could not be observed anymore because there was no more. They ran out of the ashes of the Paraduma. So once you run out of the ashes of the Paraduma, eventually people are as more and more people become Tavei Tumas Meis and can no longer be rectified by being purified. And as time goes on, everyone eventually is going to become Tavei. So they still had, for the Gemara says, they still had for hundreds of years, they had ashes left over from the Beis HaMikdash. So those ashes lasted for hundreds and hundreds of 100 years, 20 years into the period of Ruda Nasi. They were still being Mitara, people who wanted to eat Truma Mitara. So you don't need that many ashes. One ash and some water. So Paraduma can last a long, 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 long time. But eventually, even that they ran out of. And at that point, the Truma Mitara became obsolete. So in the period, in the days of Yudha Nasi, they were still reckoning with issues. They were still passing shahs of Tumah V'Tahara. So there was a whole shah that had come up, and relying on Rabbi Eliezer's view would have been very, very helpful because there wasn't that much food around. People were very hungry. There was a famine. And that would have been very helpful to rely on the lenient view. So the question was posed to Yudha Nasi, are we permitted to do so? So we generally don't follow the view of Rabbi Eliezer, but under extenuating circumstances can we? So the Gemara draws the following distinction. It depends. If Rabbi Eliezer's view was outright rejected, maybe it was put up for a vote, and it was a formal based in it, and then we came to the conclusion, Rabbi Eliezer's view is just not accepted by Allah, and then it's over, the game's over. Then the view is not accepted, it's not accepted, you can't rely on it, even b'shas el chak. However, if Rabbi Eliezer's view was not outright rejected, it's just that it was assumed that we're not following it, because it's just in the minority, yachram v'charabim, but there was never really what we call in Allah an amdul minyan. There was never a formal role rejecting of his view, so his view then still stands. His view still has a halachic weight to it, and again, we're not supposed to follow it. We should follow the view of the majority. We should be machmir, but we have a right to be makel if there's some very, very pressing circumstances. Those are basically the two guidelines that the Gemara gives us in Maseches Nida, that we can bring back a yochid onto the table of discussion if the view wasn't rejected outright. So that Gemara, those two dinim that really were neither actually critical in terms of Pesach Halacha, because there was a big machlekes acharonim, just how far the Gemara went with that. So the Taz, the Yerdeya, claims that the Gemara meant that legamre, that any view that was not outright rejected can be relied upon b'shas hachak, even if it's a question of a deraisa. Even if there's a real deraisa playing out, it doesn't matter. You can still rely on the kedai who plenty lisbachalah b'shas hachak. It's pressing, extenuating circumstances. We can bring back to life shitas that were otherwise not literally rejected, but for all practical purposes rejected, as long as they weren't literally outvoted. And you can make even the arises based on that principle. The Taz actually applies that principle to a very, very famous scenario. The Taz says he thinks that's the source for the Minhag Olam that's been around for almost 2,000 years, to be very, very lenient on the question of Chadash and Chutz Laretz. We all know the Torah tells us that when it's not allowed to eat from new grain before the Korban Omer is brought, so when that did apply to the Torah, it's about Hazeh. Any grain that's that was grew ready that hasn't passed over a Korban Omer or even the Korban Omer isn't brought, hasn't passed by the second day of Pesach, so that grain is off limits b'daraisa. So there's machlekes at Tanoim whether that is applies only to grain grown in Eretz Yisrael, or does that apply to grain that's growing in Chutz Laretz as well? So this was a raging machlekes at Tanoim and Amarayim, Rishayim and Shura, different opinions for many, many hundreds and thousands of years about what the answer to that question is. The Minhag HaOlam has been for quite some time, I'm talking about going back to Europe already, has been very, very, very lenient about this. Most people, even great Talmid Chacham and great Tzaddikim in Europe, were not machmir on Chadash. And one of the reasons why they weren't machmir Chadash is so we're relying on the Shita that says that it's Chutz Laretz. It's Chadash Chutz Laretz, Chadash Chutz Laretz doesn't exist. So the problem with that assumption is that if you look at Rishonim, the overwhelming majority of the Rishonim don't hold that way. The Rif didn't hold that way, and the Rambam didn't hold that way, and the Rosh didn't hold that way, and the Shulchan Aruch didn't hold that way, and the Gra didn't hold that way. Many, 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 probably most of the official sources that we generally look to for guidance in Halacha did not hold that way. And this, of course, posed a very, very big challenge. So what are we doing? So who will we be making one? The word Gedoli Rishonim will be making one. There's a rule under Rabbeinu Baruch, so there were Rishonim who were Mekil, but in terms of normal halacha, that's not exactly the way it plays out for us. The Taz in Yerdei writes, he thinks that the reason why the Minhag HaOlam is meant to be so lenient about Chodesh to the very day is based on the following Gemara, that Gemara Maseches Nida. Kedai hu, the Mekilim, the Smochlem, Shasachach. It's a big Shasachach. Like the Taz was talking in 1500s in Poland, it's very, very difficult to be Machmir the Chodesh. One could argue that maybe those facts have changed significantly b'zman hazeh. Today was a fact. It's significantly easier to be machmir chadash today than it was in Poland in the 1500s. And that's, I think, a non-negotiable statement. Today, to be machmir chadash just basically means getting the chadash app on your phone and every time you go to the store and just taking a look at the code on the box of cereal and figuring out whether it's chadash or not. So it's significantly easier than it was in the olden days. But again, let's just present in terms of pure halacha. So the Taz says that since it was a big shasar chak, therefore the oilam was mekel like the mekila because kedai l'smach l'bishasar chak. And it wasn't a nimnu v'gomer against it. There was never an official vote that said we have to vote that we're machmer chadash. And therefore we can rely on the mekila even though chadash is a potential deraisa. So the shach disagrees that. The shach says that is not the reason why klai yisrael are mekel. There are other reasons. There are very, very good legitimate reasons. One doesn't have to feel the doing anything Shalika did. Along with great, great, great Gedolei, Gedolei Apostolim, including the majority, overall majority of Klal Yisrael, who are from Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, who are making the Chodesh, this man is there. The Shach says there are other good reasons to make it, but not this one. This reason is not a good reason. Why, says the Shach? Because this is the Araisa. And that Kal, the Gemara, was only true to Gabi the Rabbanans. That particular case, the Gemara happened to be in the Rabbanans, the Gishal of Tum Tara. Says the Shach, we have no great. So the bottom line is, when I slice it, there is a principle that emanates from halacha that sometimes we do things relying on shitas that we don't otherwise rely on when extenuating circumstances come up, when the events come up, when it's after the fact already come up. We pull sometimes certain shitas out of the box, shitas that we don't normally rely on. But there is a concept in halacha that the event rely on things, especially like we did in the Rabbanan. Which just makes the question even more difficult over here. That how come when, on the one hand, we're not convinced that you're not allowed to cook things derech Iroi. We're far from convinced. The Rashbam was far from convinced. Tosfos was far from convinced. We had five Gemaras that go either way. Every single kasher in town we defended. So we're not completely convinced that you're not allowed to pour hot water onto spices. So I understand. I'm not advocating making tea on Shabbos. I just want to know why, with the Yevet, we have to be machmet to even throw the tea out. That's what I don't understand. How can the Magen Avraham himself, was the source that permitted with the Yevet certain things? How come he doesn't permit with the Yevet if the tea was made? So we'll have to try to figure out the second half of this riddle tomorrow. Is that what I think should be lemaisa? So we spent so much time on the theoretical. The lumdus, the rayas back and forth. Now we're just trying to make headway through the halacha lemaisa. But what should we tell people with the evet if a person went out and violated his din of cooking derech Iroi? What's the status of the tea that was made by Isser and Shabbos? So, but Hashem, tomorrow we'll try to put the final touches onto this subject. I want you to have a good day.